Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. We're going to take the first couple of segments of the show, and we're going to talk about the Russian mentality vis-a-vis the Ukraine. Jimmy has done a fair amount of research on this. Frieda did a bit of research on it, but we're going to start out with Jim. Jimmy, what's going on in the Ukraine as far as the Ruskies are concerned?
Okay, so I think it's really important to be objective and to look at this. We've got a lot of comments during the week on the blog about, who favors what. And it has nothing to do with favoritism. It has to do with actually looking at operational objectives on the ground in Ukraine for Russian military targets. And here's some reality checks. They've lost 70, 80, possibly 90 aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
They have lost hundreds of armored vehicles. They have lost what some reports as many, somewhere between 10 and 15,000, potentially more, killed in action, with 15 to 20, maybe more, thousand wounded in action.
Yeah.
They have not tactically taken control of any of their major objectives. Now, this is the reality on the ground. Compare that to, say, the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003.
Yeah.
60,000, and remember, the Russians went in with somewhere between 130,000 and 150,000 soldiers against an army of no more than, less than 50,000. So a 3-to-1 advantage with a much larger reserve force, with a much higher percentage of aircraft and armor. So what the United States, when we went into Iraq in 2003, lost a couple of helicopters, a couple of fast-moving aircraft, and less than 10 armored vehicles all the way to Baghdad with only 60,000 troops moving over 400 miles against an army of 400,000 with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of reserves and different Fedayeen and other insurgency groups.
Right.
That was in the initial stages of the war. We had total air supremacy within 24 hours. Now, there's a difference between air supremacy and air superiority. Air superiority means you have pretty much at will, you can attack and you control most of the skies. Air supremacy means anything else the enemy flies dies. The Russians right now have some air superiority because of the size and the numbers of their aircraft. They do not have air supremacy. This is a tactical and a military reality. So what you're seeing is the Ukrainian forces are inflicting massive casualties, a much higher ratio than the Ukrainian forces are taking. And the Ukrainian forces are definitely taking casualties. There's no question. And they are having a tremendous amount of losses and damage done to their cities, their roads, to their infrastructure, their leadership, and of course the individuals and the people there. But the comparison for the invading army, for the Russian army, this is not going well for them. And that's just a fact. You cannot ignore that reality. And it's going to be incredibly costly to continue this operation. And I want to remind all the listeners out there, the United States had total air supremacy. We had total firepower supremacy. We had military logistics capabilities. We had a much higher technological capability in Iraq and Afghanistan. 20 years later, we lost both of them. We lost both of them. That means nothing when you're fighting a dedicated insurgent force. And what you see in Ukraine right now is people that are fighting for their territory, for their nation, for their own survival. And it's going to be incredibly hard, objectively, for the Russians to do anything in order to stop this without a massive, massive effort that will be too costly, in my view, for them to sustain.
Give me some idea about longevity, if you would, Jimmy. I You feel basically what you just said is the Russians are probably not going to win this thing under the current conditions. Give me some time frame when perhaps they'll realize that and not justifiably, that's the wrong word to use, and in order, they'll get out with some way that they can save, that Putin can save face. You got a comment on that?
Yeah, so it's a very good question. And I actually, you know, I certainly can't get into Putin's mind. I have, because of my experience as a Russian foreign area officer and experience in the region, living and operating with the Russians and having multiple Russian military officers as not only friends, but people that I had to work with on a regular basis as an attaché, and studying them for decades and being a Russian linguist. That experience, there's an adage, you know, there's a fisherman on the Caspian Sea. It's a kind of a parable for Russian activities. He catches the magic fish. The magic fish says, "Hey, look, let me go, and I'll grant you any wish that you want." And the fisherman looks at the magic fish and says, "Anything that I want, magic fish. Anything you want, except for on one condition. Whatever I give to you, I give to your neighbor twofold." And the fisherman looks. He turns and says, "Okay, poke out my right eye." Do you get the point?
Yeah.
Sometimes they will do something in order to destroy someone else at their own risk and their own cost. And unfortunately, what I'm afraid of is that as Putin feels the pressure not to fail on this operation, he will continue to attempt to put more pressure on the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian government, and more pressure on the West. Very, you know, what he did with the yesterday on Thursday, the 31st of March, declaring that he would only accept gold or rubles for payment for gas supplies, and he would cut people off in Europe that did not pay them. I think he's attempting to leverage something that in the long run will be very much to his detriment. And those people that believe that he somehow, with his very small, relatively small economy, is going to change the world system, whether you'd like to see it changed or not. And in some ways, I very much would like to see things come back to commodity-based pricing, you know, gold standard, and maybe some of these valuations that make sense. But to think that he's somehow going to force that against the West, I just don't see it being rational. So this could drag on. I mean, to your original question, this could drag on for a period of time with him attempting to put more pressure and costing more lives, more destruction across the board. And in the end, I don't care if he kills Zelensky. I don't care if he takes Kiev. He does not win this battle, even if he takes control of Ukraine. It is going to be an ugly, long-term process. And the people that have lost, almost everyone, every Ukrainian right now is suffering from this, losing family members, having to move, having to run, having to hide from their destruction. They will hate Russians forever, for generations. They will continue. There will be some that will continue to fight no matter how long, no matter how far and how much of a sacrifice against them. And that's a reality in the region. That's just the way it works. The Russians would do the same if it worked the other way, as we saw in World War II.
Yeah. Well, I would make a couple of comments on what you just said. I really agree with everything that you have said. The one comment you made dealing with the potentiality of going back on the gold standard, I like that comment a lot, and I'm glad you brought that up. Economies are basically, if they are not a value-based economy, economies always fail. You cannot just print money, etc., etc. And I think the one good thing that could come out of this is we could end up back on a gold standard. And I've always believed strongly in that. Ladies and gentlemen, time for a little shift. Frida's now going to talk a little bit about the mind of the Russian soldiers. Be right back.